This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
BYU taking on Bama, Maryland, Florida tonight, Arizona and Duke, and then you've got Arkansas, Texas Tech, which is a game we're both interested in.
Kind of pulling for Calipari now. Yeah. You know, yeah. I got to be honest. I'd love to – I mean, those Kentucky fans, they would be blue in the face, literally, if you pulled it off.
Well, the thing is, this is the irony. Couldn't win a first-round game
right,
to save his life.
Couple years,
it's
right?
It's what got him fired. Ultimately, obviously, they allowed him to step away, and you need a new voice. But – those were his words. But, Mike, Arkansas can beat Tech. And I think Tech's a 5.5-point favorite. We're going to see. But those are the games we'll certainly talk more about throughout the course of the day. And then we'll get into Friday's games, which, of course, happen here in the ATL. Old Miss, Michigan State, the early game. And then Michigan-Auburn is the late game on Friday. We'll get to that. But we got to talk more baseball along the way. Thanks to John Smoltz who stopped by. If you missed that interview, go online at odyssey.com. Had some interesting things to say about Strider, the pitching staff, and a variety of things with the lineup as Smoltz came on in the first hour of the show. You also heard Chipper Jones, and coming up in less than 10 minutes from now, you'll get a chance to hear Double-A Mike, who was on with John Fricke last night. He gives us an update on Strider, Sean Murphy, and Acuna, and what the timetable looks like coming from our general manager. Right. So that's on the way here in 10 minutes.
But our question is just the only thing you don't have clarity on is when will we see Ronald? Is it May-ish? May 1st-ish?
I think so. I don't think he plays this month. I'm saying April. We're here, but right. I don't think he plays in the month of April. Hey, man, we are live at Twin Peaks. Turtle's here with us, by the way, hanging out. We'd love to get a chance to see you guys, a few cats in here, hanging out, enjoying some lunch, and we'll be here until 7 tonight. Again, we do have Hawks basketball tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But we are going to be carrying the NCAA tournament throughout the course of the weekend. We are your home for the tournament. So make sure if you catch a game, you want to catch a game, you can. Also, back at the studio, Big O is there hanging out. Thank you for pushing all the buttons, Big O. Let's get to 4th and 1. Fourth and One brought to you by our friends at Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. I said to you when the combine happened, I'm a little bit concerned about Abdul Carter.
Right.
But then you look at the tape, dude didn't miss a game. He was a beast. Now, Mike, he didn't work out then, and he's not working out Friday at Penn State's Pro Day. Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, says he's still finishing up rehab. Does this in any way affect his draft status?
Nah, I mean, if you believe he's the guy and he's going to be good to go by your camp or, you know, opening day, you got the tape. You know what this guy's all about. But, again, I don't ever trust anything that Drew Rosenhaus says. I don't understand that. You know, as my dad would say, I know that dude's lying. His lips are moving. But recovering from that shoulder injury he received in the playoff game against Boise State. And, again, no workout at the combine because if it couldn't do the bench, couldn't do all the stuff
sure.
you want to see. But, again, you've seen the tape. He's a beast. Is he – now, the stuff that I saw pre-drafts, you and I were joking around – compared him to Reggie White, whoa, slow your roll. You want to say a poor man's Micah Parsons, okay.
I'm with that.
But I think he's certainly one of the best defensive players in this draft, but still not sold. I just think Travis Hunter is the perfect weapon. Travis Hunter is the guy. You get multiplicity. Look, you've got to figure out with your coach how you're going to use him on the offensive side, but this guy's a shutdown corner and a tremendous talent. To me, that's a two-for-one. You know, how do you not take that guy second overall?
Well, I think he's the best player in the draft, okay, just because of the versatility he brings. But simply based on position, this is the guy that everybody's saying is the best edge guy.
Right.
And, Mike, the thing about
and
Rosenhaus –
Miles Garrett's pretty darn sweet.
I agree. And that's why I think the Browns would be okay. smart to do this. Look, you still owe Deshaun Watson a lot of money. Once they trade for Kirk Cousins – see what I did there? Once they trade for Cousins, they have a guy in place, and they're still paying for Deshaun. Who knows if they walk away from that Deshaun contract? Look, they technically, once they trade for Cousins, could be paying Cousins less than what they're paying Deshaun Watson.
Well, a lot less, because you got to figure we're going to have to eat 75% of it, at least 50% of it. You know, we're going to be basically buying a draft pick in the 2026 draft.
Yes, Kurt, we're sending you to Cleveland.
Yeah, that's where it goes. Now, provided Kirk's okay and his tender sensibilities aren't offended if they do draft a quarterback in the fifth round.
How's he going to control that?
Who knows? I mean, look. I still think there is some culpability on our general manager for the communication or lack thereof before the draft.
To tell him?
To say, look, here's what the plan is. Because Kirk was of the opinion that he was not going to be challenged. And at that stage of his career, I think there's always going to be an heir apparent. But, you know, that was the mindset. It's been well documented in articles that have been written. It's why he didn't want to stay in Minnesota. He knew they were going to pick up a new quarterback.
Yeah.
So, either way, he controls this thing, which is so unfair to the Falcons. He's basically had the leverage as it has been the last, what, 3-4 months, trying to leverage it by the comments of the media at the Super Bowl, getting to meet with Arthur Blank, and now insisting, no, you won't get to trade me before the draft.
Abdul Carter's agent, Rosenhaus, Mike, said it. His lips are moving. He said he still may do a workout for teams sometime in mid-April okay. before the draft.
All right, you got
no
promises. You got 2 to 3 weeks.
Then. Yes, okay. no promises, but he's not working out for the pro day. Meanwhile, what else is going on around the NFL? Well, look, we made a lot of fun with this, and we're talking about Cleveland. For those who missed it yesterday, Bruce Drennan talked about the Browns potentially trading for Dak Prescott.
Hold on to your socks, folks. Get ready for this.
And this just blew up in his face, Mike, as all the credible reporters around the country who are following these other teams are like, not hearing that. Here's what Bruce Drennan said.
I got a pretty darn good source within the Browns organization. I heard since our last show that part of the reason Miles Garrett was so willing to sign this extension for contract, yeah, money. The Browns are negotiating as we speak with the Dallas Cowboys for a trade for Dak Prescott. Now, Prescott has a hamstring injury as we speak, and he may not be ready for the start of training camp. But this comes from a couple of different sources. Take it for what it's worth. If it does come about, remember where you heard it first.
If it does come about, way to have confidence in your reporting.
Well, that's a Buck Belue-like break right there.
Oh, come on.
Sources in Athens telling me Mike Bobo is going to step down. Yeah, man. I mean, and then to say, you know, these rumors, I don't know where they start. You started them. So this guy, God bless him. As I said to Carl, maybe that's you and me in 20 years. Dukes and Bell. I tell you what, I heard the Braves are going to move to the Bahamas. Sources inside the organization.
If it happens, you heard it here first.
No, I mean, because I've got a pretty good first. It's complete BS.
It is.
And oh, by the way, the Cowboys, it would be what, a $98 million dead cap hit to trade Dak? I mean, yes, the Browns have got $18 million in cap space and could certainly sign a guy, but the team that trades him gets it in the shorts. It's never going to happen.
It doesn't make sense.
Hey, guys, you want to hear something fun about Bruce?
Bruce Drennan?
In 2007, you know he did 5 months Fed time for tax evasion?
Stop it.
Yeah, and then he also published an online diary.
Well, that was an accounting error. That was an accounting error. And that was an endorsement deal that I used to do with Lieberman and Associates.
Lieberman.
Yes, of Youngstown, Ohio. And unbeknownst to me, they were putting my money not into a Roth, as I thought, Carl, but apparently to a numbered bank account in Switzerland.
This is a true story,
this
Owen.
This is a true story. If you go to search him in Cleveland19.com, he actually did online journal entries while he was in prison.
Now, look, as I say all the time when I criticize Stephen A. for his crap on LeBron this week, I support everyone's hustle. But this guy, Carl, and you know the business, this is just another radio dirtbag.
It is.
This is just another wackadoodle in the radio business.
I got a pretty darn good source.
You know, guys ask me, would you ever break any stories, Mike? I go, yeah, when I know they're true. Yeah. When I know for a fact, like when George O'Leary was going to Notre Dame, you know, that's about all I've ever got on my resume. I had a good source inside Georgia Tech. But I'm not going to pull something out of my tuchus, Carl, and throw it out there.
No.
I've got a pretty good source on this.
Now, look, and if you feel good about it, you own it, man. You stand on it. And that's just the worst part about that whole thing is he goes through that whole bit and then goes, and if it happens to happen, well, you heard it here first. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Meanwhile, let's hear from Russell Wilson. Mike, his message to Giants fans. Listen to this.
What's up, guys? Russell Wilson here, quarterback of the New York Giants. Man, I'm so excited to be here. And let's make sure we make this happen. Let's do whatever it takes. Go Big Blue.
Corny.
Why do you and I just cringe every time Russell Wilson opens his mouth?
Because it's the same thing everywhere he goes. There was a time where Russ, when he was in Seattle, you guys remember this? After every interview, it didn't matter, big or small. Go Hawks.
Right.
Go Hawks. Everything he did was go Hawks. And you were like, okay, bro, we get it. You're in the NFL now. You don't need to necessarily do that. We know you're the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks.
Right.
But it was corny.
Right.
Then he gets to Denver. What's he do?
Let's ride.
Let's ride. Then he gets to Pittsburgh. What's he do? Same damn thing. And now he's in Giants country.
Go Big
and here
Blue.
He is. Yes. Come on. Come on, Russ.
Well, I mean, that is, you know, what Giants fans do say Big Blue, but yeah, it's just – yeah.
Yeah, but that's – you know what that is? That's him getting to town and going,
I know.
What's the slogan?
Yeah.
What do I need to say?
Insert slogan here. Look, the thing with Russ, and I defended Russ for many, many years because I always thought that the criticisms were invalid. I always thought that Pete Carroll was the bad guy. And then you hear stuff from former teammates. And I love Marshawn Lynch. I said, well, Marshawn's sometimes a little goofy. But everybody who played with this guy said he's a phony.
Mike, Pete Carroll won a Super Bowl with this dude. He's on the free agent market. And Carroll trades for Geno
Smith.
Right. A trade. He didn't even say, you know, we could get Russ for little or nothing.
For nothing.
I want a Super Bowl with this dude. I think we can make this work. Nah, I'm going to go trade for Geno. That should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and like I said, you can be a great athlete. But that's why, see, that's the thing with Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins is kind of cut of the same cloth.
You take more shot to Cousins?
Well, I'm just going to say, I think maybe he's not aware of it. I think everything Russ does is calculated. I think maybe Kirk doesn't realize that he comes off as a phony. But he still sounds like a phony. When you preach the team dynamic and you preach leadership and you pull the stuff you pull by basically lying about your status twice, that's not a leadership role.
It's not. Coming up, AA, Alex Anthopoulos.
You fell into a trap.
Braves general manager. Stopped by with John Fricke last night. We'll find out the latest status on our injured guys. Murphy, Acuna, Strider. When are they actually going to be on the field? Stay there. You'll hear Alex next. It is opening day for the Braves at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coming up, we will explore this ongoing beef between Stephen A. Smith and LeBron James after LeBron went on the Pat McAfee show and said what he said yesterday. And today was Stephen A.'s chance to respond. But, Mike, as we found out before we let you hear AA, and you got to stick around for this because some of this stuff you got to hear. We found out that there's a little bit excessive and over-exaggeration on some of this stuff that's being said.
He's
huh?
throwing some jive out there about LeBron. If you want to go after a guy, use facts. So, yeah, Stephen A. kind of pulling some pages out of Skip Bayless's playbook on this one. And LeBron, I mean, the court of public opinion, Stephen A., you're going to come up short on this one every time.
All right, man, more on that. Yeah, man, no man's on the way. And also, we will talk about the Dogs. Gunnar Stockton is leading the right way, according to Kirby Smart. Find out what we're talking about. More on our Braves as well. Opening day right around the corner. AA stopped by John Fricke's show last night on the night show and talked about a variety of things. The first thing John asked him, though, was to give us an update on Sean Murphy, Ronald Acuna, and Spencer Strider. Here's what our general manager had to say about when they might return.
All right, so let's turn our attention to now. So when I ask you about the three players, and I'm going to ask you about Sean Murphy, Spencer Strider, and Ronald Acuna Jr., you know, when you expect them to be back and healthy. But I also would like you to kind of give us a unique little perspective for that question, because through your eyes, Alex, are these guys, are you looking going, okay, they're not only going to be back, but they're going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I'd say so. Sean Murphy, look, he was unbelievable first half of 23. I think he had just under 1,000 OPS or right at 1,000, starting catcher for the All-Star game. He had never done that before in his career, so I don't think that's fair. But I think an 800 OPS, he was a 5-war player, great defender, and so on. And second half of 23, and then last year with the oblique, I hate to say it was a lost season because he came back and played. He just didn't end up playing to the level he had before. We did do a bunch of studies and analysis on the impact of obliques and so on. And I know it sounds like an excuse, and I didn't ask anybody to do it. It was brought to my attention that there are effects and there are impacts, and it's unfortunate. With the cracked rib, I was at the game. He got hit in the back, and he kept playing, and he played through it. But there's nothing that tells me, when you look at his career and the body of work, what we saw last year and the half of 23, he had never done that before. And this is still a young man, great tools, great talent. I think Sean Murphy absolutely will be back to the player he was. The way Strider looked that first game was vintage Cy Young candidate Strider. The second game, not as sharp, but still very good stuff. So I don't want to put expectations on these guys, but he looks fantastic. And Ronald, I think the fact that we're taking it slower and we're building up that foundation even more, and he's not trying to push, because he really did push in 2022 to get back. To hold him back was very challenging. And he was cleared by the doctor, but we all saw he was a good player, not a great player. So he's hitting a ton, looks great in BP and so on. I don't know what we're going to get from Ronald. I expect him to be very good. MVP level might be a little high, but I think we're definitely going to get a better version than we saw in 22.
All back by end of April, maybe, or is that too soon?
Yeah, I would say Ronald at this point, I don't think you're going to see April. So I haven't ever announced that anywhere or said anything, but I think with where we're at now, that doesn't mean it can't be, you know, early May, you know, but I don't think you're going to see a return with April in that date. He's playing in games in Florida unextended. He's getting plenty of at-bats. I'm getting box scores daily. He needs to get cleared to do outfield work. And I think once he gets cleared to do that and really step on it and being able to chase balls down, run the braces aggressively and do all those things that they feel like the foundation is there, he'll then he'll transition at some point to a rehab assignment. And at that point, I don't expect it to be long, because he'll have had at-bats, and it won't be about getting his timing. It'll just be about getting his legs strong enough to play 9 innings in the field multiple days in a row. So Strider, going to make his first rehab start in Charlotte on the road for Gwinnett on Saturday. His pitch count got up to 45 that last spring outing, and we're hoping to get him into the fourth inning now. The pitch count maybe gets close to 60. We haven't set a number. Could get to 60. On average, you bump up 15 each outing, and if that goes well and he does well, then hopefully you get to the fifth, the following one, which will be 5 or 6 days after that, and maybe you're getting a 70, 75. And then we'll just see how he feels. And I think once you to the point that you feel like he can go long enough and deep enough to help the big league team, as long as he feels like he's ready to be activated and come back, then we'll have a conversation. But he will absolutely be a part of the process. And we know that once we activate him, you know, the kid gloves are off. You know, he's going to have to be available, 5-man rotation, being able to go 5-6 innings or more. So we just want to make sure that foundation is set, because he's getting very, very close.
Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos with John Fricke on Sports Radio 92 on the game. You mentioned 5-man. Is that what we're going to start with Strider, you know, not ready yet? You're going to go with, you know, the Sale and Schwellenbach, Lopez, and then what? How does it stack right now for you?
Yeah, we're going to go with a 5-man unless we feel guys need days. So right now you can just assume that the 5 that we have, we're going to roll with that. So Sale gets game 1 and game 6. So that would be normal rest. And as we have off days and so on, we're going to take advantage of those if at some point we think we can build in a spot start. But again, that was very challenging last year. To do it, You have to take someone out of your bullpen. So you go from an 8-man bullpen to a 7. You need to have someone that has options to do it. You have to bring that spot starter up that you believe can help you win a game. Has to be good enough to do that. Have them pitch for a day, then send them back down. And again, when you go down, you're out. You're not available for 2 weeks. And then you have to bring another reliever up that you think is still viable for you for that period. So it's challenging. You need quality depth. And the worst thing that we can do is, oh, we want to build an extra day's rest and go to a 6-man rotation, and that spot starter, 6-starter, comes in and throws 2 innings and destroys our bullpen. Mm-hmm. To dig out of that is a real issue. So there's a lot of times we're just not in a position to do it, and we didn't do it the last 2 months of the year last year because we didn't have the options. We would have to DFA guys to get rid of them in our bullpen. So for now, there's a lot of off days in April. We're just going to stick with a 5-man. Guys like A.J. Smith-Sharber do have options. He's going to have to continue to perform to stay up. But we're optimistic and excited with what we saw in spring training, and hopefully he gets a nice long run here until Strider's back, and then we'll see who the best guy is. I mean, if Smith-Sharber's throwing better than Grant Holmes, then we know Grant Holmes has experience to be in the bullpen, but we're going to take the best 5, and whoever's throwing the best is going to stay in there.
Besides Iglesias as the closer here, is 7 and 8 and 9, however you're going to stack that back into the bullpen, you know, the old night shift here, is that kind of, you know, is that, I don't want to say that you're auditioning guys, but is that in flux a little bit, or are you pretty much set that, hey, I know who, you know, or Brian knows who 6, 7, 8, 9 are going to be?
No, I think that's very fair. And look, that we knew once you did, last year was Joe Jimenez's, A.J. Minter at the start of the year, lockdown, guys you felt very good about. Pierce Johnson coming off his 23 season, you felt very, very good about the depth there. Now, look, we thought we had our bullpen was still strong at the end of the year. We lost A.J. Minter for essentially the month of August, September, and into October. So we had lost him for the last third, and we still felt we had a good bullpen because Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer did a nice job from the left side. So we need guys like Daisbell Hernandez. You know, Pierce Johnson didn't throw as well at the end of the year. We think he's back to throwing like he did early and like he did in 23. So if Pierce can now be back to who he was, Daisbell Hernandez did a nice job as well. Neris, with his experience, he saved a lot of games for the Cubs, pitched well for the Astros. Angel De Los Santos has a fantastic arm. But look, there's definitely an element of unknown there. There's volatility there. You know, I've asked Nick the same question you did. How you feeling? We have a 3-1 lead, and starter goes 5 or 6, especially early. You know, starters aren't going that deep. They're going to monitor the pitch count and so on. How are we lining up 6, 7, 8, 9? And you know, he's going to go with what he feels like. But he also understands it might take a little bit of time to feel out how it's going to go. And you don't want to use the word experiment, like you said, or audition and so on. But, you know, he's had to adjust over time. Last year, Daisbell Hernandez worked his way into getting late-inning opportunities. And, you know, I remember that game against the Marlins. Season's on the line. Every game counted. Bases loaded. He brought him in, and there was a lot of other guys in the bullpen, and he believed in him. So he's made adjustments on the fly in the past. We wouldn't have thought Ramon Laureano would be a starting outfielder for us, and he was. He beat out Kelnick, beat out Adam Duvall. He was playing the best. So I do think you're going to see guys like Dylan Lee late in the game. I think Pierce Johnson late in the game. I don't want to speak for Snit. I think after that, whether it's De Los Santos, Neris, Daisbell Hernandez, Bummer, I think it'll depend on how some of the scouting reports are, guys susceptible to velocity or to off-speed or left-handed sink and things like that. But he'll find his way through it. Hopefully these guys get the job done for him. And we've got a chance to have a strong pen, but we don't necessarily have the certainty that we thought we had in years past.
We know what we're getting when we'll worry about Acuna when he gets back and gets healthy, and we know what we're getting out of, you know, Olson and certainly Ozzie, and in terms of their being able to perform at a certain level offensively. So three guys in particular. Michael Harris, are you ready to him to explode into, we're talking about best center fielder in the game. Is Austin Riley ready to explode into a legit MVP candidate? And what do we expect out of Profar?
Yeah, they've got the talent to do all those things. The way Harris played at the end of the year was awesome. We need him to do it over 6 months now and stay healthy. The last 2 years, he's missed some time, and he's so critical and so important, and staying on the field is important. Riley, the same way. We were able to pinpoint exactly what was going on. Remember, we had a five-game streak of losses. We were playing the Orioles. His OPS was down in the sixes, low sixes, I think, for Riley. And when we got back home, the R&D department and so on found something. We brought it to Kevin Seitzer. He agreed with it and just pointing it out to Austin, and I'm sure there's plenty of other work beyond there, but it kind of clicked back to who he was, and he was back to the all-star candidate, one of the best third basemen in the game. So, and Jurickson Profar, just the quality of at-bats, switch hitter is huge for us, contact bat, draws his walks. You know, we really saw it last year, game one of the postseason against the Padres, against King, who we're going to face tomorrow. All right-handed hitters, pretty much, because Albies was hitting only from the right side. We had Harris and Olson, but the rest of the guys were all right. And his breaking ball to righties is really tough. And now having a bunch of left-handed hitters in the lineup, guys that can draw walks, guys that can make contact, I just think the lineup is so much deeper and longer, even without Ronald, than it was a year ago in the playoffs against them. So I'm just excited about that depth. We're trying to build a lineup that we're not so reliant on one guy or the top half of the lineup or the bottom. You want to be nine deep where guys slump, guys get hurt. You still can get the job done. So when Ronald comes back, I like our lineup as much as anyone's in the NL.
What would you say this team right now, your sense of them as they begin the year, what's their focus? Because every team is unique, right? I mean, every team's got something different to it, you know, even if it's essentially the same guys. How do you kind of view this team? Is it workmanlike? Do they feel like they have unfinished business? Where do you think these guys fall in that?
You know, it's very interesting you ask that because, you know, I'm around them all the time and it's the only team I'm around, so I can compare it to other teams I've been with in the past, whether that's with the Dodgers or the Blue Jays, but I've been here now going into my eighth year. So I ask a lot of players that come from the outside that have been on winning teams, you know, how do we compare? What is it like? What do you see? And I'm not looking for compliments by any stretch, just an honest, candid, organic conversation. And you know, I was with Profar on one of the night games in the training room, and he was there. He's just rehabbing his wrist and getting ready to play in a few days at that time. And I said, I'm just curious, you came from a really good clubhouse that's winning a lot of games and so on. I said, what do you notice about our place? What do you think? He said, and it wasn't a criticism of anybody else. He said, what I've noticed is this team is really together. The entire team is together. And he put his hands together like in like a lock form. And a lot of times you'll have cliques, right? The Latin players will hang out with the Latin players, the Americans and so on, or, you know, the position players, the relievers hang out and so on. And that's what you strive for as a GM. You want to have harmony. You want to have unity. You want these guys to get together. There's a sense of pride. Obviously, you want to win games, of course. But when you walk down there and you know it's organic, it's authentic, these guys truly enjoy being around each other, playing with each other. I think the fans see it on TV as well. And I didn't realize that as a young GM. I did later in my time in Toronto, and I really started paying attention to that. But everyone says the same thing. This team is together. They get along, but they're very professional, and they go about their work. And the work ethic is very high. And they will notice, you know, there's been some moments where we're bringing in a guy on a minor league deal or whatever it might be, and you can tell if the guy's not working as hard as he should. You kind of get shunned by the group a little bit, or you hear some comments, oh, that guy's not putting in the work and the time. And so I love that, you know, people talk about culture, and, you know, we don't have any type of manual when someone shows up and says, play every day, work hard, and so on. I think it's the most overused word in sports. I know it's real, and it's definitely a thing, but the players you get make the culture. And that's when people say, what's the Braves culture? It's go through the 26 players on the roster. That's the culture. And the players will change, obviously, year to year. And look, at the end of the day, you're being selective on who you bring in. But, you know, we didn't tell Matt Olson to play every day. We acquired him partly because he did play every day. And there's certain makeup that comes with that. And guys that are good teammates, Chris Sale. And so we didn't teach Chris Sale or give him. So you flood the clubhouse with those guys. That creates the culture. And that's not the same. And it's the same thing with the coaches, the manager, and so on. I think it starts with the selection of the staff and the people. And then, in my mind, the culture happens. I don't believe we're going to come in and change it. You change it with the people. That's my view.
Interesting stuff from Alex Anthopoulos, answering all the questions from our own John Fricke as we get ready for opening day. It's Dukes and Bell live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. We're coming back. Yeah, man, no man's next. Ha 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 ha! See, you were ear hustling, Oren. You were ear hustling. We're in here talking about.
Y'all were too far from the mic for me to say anything.
I was telling Mike.
We were going through the history of New Edition and then the subsequent solo careers because Carl was just in Vegas. New Edition's playing what it
went. They are. They are out there. They have a residency out there. But I was saying that in the third episode of that Celtics doc that you've been telling me about,
right.
I watched Bell Biv DeVoe. They grew up, obviously, in Roxbury in Boston, and they're in this doc, and they're talking about, you know, where they grew up,
right.
The racial tension, and the Celtic stuff. And so then that led us down this whole New Edition, you know, how the band changed and who we were talking
and
about.
We were trying to think of, like, the singles, and because Carl and I, when you come up with the music side before they let you do talk radio, and I actually played Mr. Sensitivity by Ralph Tresvant when I worked at a station in Virginia. So we were kind of going through some of the solo stuff and back in the day.
Yeah.
And Gordon, Commissioner Gordon here, was giving us, you know, some of the dynamics of the band back when.
Yeah, which led Oren to bringing in that song. great work, Oren. Hey, man, we're live at Twin Peaks. This hour is brought to you by our friends at All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Hey, more on the Braves coming up. Also, we will dive into this. Look, I'm going to say this. I don't like what's going on now. All of a sudden, this whole beef thing has turned into something that I think Mike is going in the wrong direction with Stephen A. Don't get me wrong. This ain't Tupac and Biggie, okay? All I'm telling you, though, is I don't like the way that things are being said and the levels in which this may end up, because it went from I respect him as a man coming to me talking about not saying bad things about his kid to all of a sudden now that same dude is saying bad things about LeBron.
Yeah, and I still think this, and we'll get to this in the nuts and bolts, because I think Stephen A. is in his feels that he got dissed on his own network.
I agree.
By the Pat McAfee Show, which I love. I got a kick out of it.
I agree. Yeah. All right, more on that. You have to stick around. You'll hear some of that sound. And certainly we're going to dive back in to the NCAA tournament, which resumes tonight, Sweet 16 action. Right now, though, let's get to Yeah Man, No Man. Turtle, what is going on today, Turtle?
You guys are eating into my damn segment.
Sorry, Squid Bizzle.
In a truncated edition of Yeah Man, No Man, real quick, a guy that all of us see as a little pompous, as a little ego-driven, actually said something that I think we're all going to like. Jay Billis pumps the brakes on transfer portal's impact on NCAA tournament upsets. This is 1 year. Let's pump the brakes. I think Jay Billis is right. I think we got to let this thing play out. I think this is 1 year, and people are, as Mike and I talked about when you were out, Carl, the whole first take mindset of things, the
sure.
zero-sum game. Yeah, man, no man. Is Jay Billis right, or is this thing going to become a trend where Cinderellas are gone?
I'm going to say, yes, they're gone, because nowadays you got, for instance, example, we just saw that Silas Demery might be leaving. There's a report from three, Georgia, Carl. So Mike White, and if he loses Asa Newell, you got to go get some dudes. So now you're right back to square one at Georgia. You build nothing off of this embarrassing loss to Gonzaga. Sorry, I'm ranting. I'm not answering your question. You got to go now call up Middle Tennessee. You got to go call Bowling Green. Whoever's got some swinging who can put the ball in the basket, Carl, get him out of here. So guys that played 2 or 3 years at these mid-majors now get picked up by the big boys.
Yep.
So the mid-majors become the G League. So, yes, Cinderella's dead.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with Mike. And here's the other part of it.
What do you mean, unfortunately?
Unfortunately, I have to agree with Mike. Here's the other part of it. Money talks. And you're seeing the fact that guys are leaving schools to go to other schools for more money. Listen, love George Mason. They can't offer you what these other schools are offering you. And the reality is that is the top-tier players will continue to go to these top-tier programs because of it. So, listen, the money disparity has always been there in college football and in basketball. But we ignored it because, well, they must be cheating. Now it's legal. So there's nothing to it. If I want to pay a kid whatever I want to pay him to come, I can do that. I just think because of that, it's going to be more difficult to build a program around kids that stick and stay, because if you're one of these mid-majors and you have a star, guess what? They're going to come poach you. And that's going to be the problem in building a team that could potentially make a run into the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight or even the Final Four, as we've seen in years past.
All right, one more before we get out of here. This one's just funny.
Cutting into my time.
This one's just funny.
Well, my interview with Alex Anthopoulos up for a more color.
Yeah. So the issue is Rule 12, Section 3, Article 1.
I don't like it already.
Paragraph.
You don't like rules.
Paragraph D. And that is unsportsmanlike conduct in the NFL. You have Randy Moss mooning the crowd.
Oh, what a disgusting display.
You have
for Joe Buck. Yeah. You just literally pulled out his Johnson in the end zone.
You have, speaking of, you have Marshawn Lynch grabbing the crotch going when the Beastquake happened. And now the latest, a trend that has been snuffed out before it even really got started. The nose wipe is no longer legal in the NFL.
Really?
I'm doing the motion right now where you take your finger and you wipe it underneath your
what
nose.
What does that symbolize?
It has a triple entendre that I'm not allowed to say on the radio.
It does?
Yes.
Yeah, remember junior high?
Would you stop it?
Yeah.
Would you you know what? I was not expecting that, okay?
James got the joke over the corner.
I was not expecting that. Charles, you're going to have to tell me off the air what these other entendres are.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
So you cannot score a touchdown now and do this?
You can't do anything and do it.
I can't get a sack and do this?
No, 15-yard penalty.
I can't pancake a guy and do this?
Nope.
I can't run over a guy and do this?
The only one I've seen that's been allowed to stick and stay is the Micah Parsons, where after you get a big sack, you crawl on the ground. Because
right.
That's not really personally offending anybody.
That's a bear crawl.
Yeah, but much like the mooning, the crotch grab, now the nose wipe has been eliminated.
I can't believe they're taking away the nose wipe, Carl. What's this world coming to?
Why did you have to sniff like
that? I'm a method actor. I went back to a time and place.
Why did you have to?
So who's complaining about this? John Mara again? Who are the uptight, white, angry, old guy owners that are bellyaching about this that no one else cares
about? Wait a minute. How do you know they're old and white owners?
Because,
never mind.
Because I don't know 99.9% of the NFL.
Never mind. Forget about that.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
I didn't know this was a – did you think this was an epidemic that we've got a nip in the bud? How about just doing the important stuff like fixing the refereeing? You know, they're moving the kickoffs now to the 35. Basically, if you take the touchback, you're getting the ball at the 35. Now, they're going to force teams to kick it to the 5-yard line.
That's silly.
First, it was about player safety. Now we have that stupid mashup at the 30-yard line with the teams right across from each other. That's another rule now they're all hot and bothered about. Rich McKay, keep your freaking mitts off my football.
There shall be no unsportsmanlike acts which are contrary to the generally understood principles, specifically including any acts of violence symbolizing a gun, which we saw penalized for, or using the, quote, nose wipe gesture, or an act that is sexually explicit.
If I use two fingers, does it matter? I'm asking. Three?
Maybe you went with the bowling grip.
I'm just saying, does it matter or is it just the gesture?
Well, there was a comedian about a decade ago that made very famous a three-finger gesture, and I'll leave it right there.
Anyway, never mind.
All right.
All right.
On that note, Oren, wipe my nose and hit my music.
Yeah, dude,
that's
crazy.
Do you feel this is an epidemic? I mean, yes, I get it. We don't want the Pop Warner kids. You don't want the little kids doing this on the Pop Warner fields of youth football. But, I mean, society's so effed right now. This is how we're going to fix everything? You can't do that anymore in the NFL. Who gives a flip? Give me a break.
I'm blown away.
Fix the friggin' refs. Then we can worry about guys doing obscene gestures on the football field.
Well, I want to find out what the other entendres are. And I'm going to right now as we take a quick break on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.